education is that we have an ideal and a goal to pursue through our education. Otherwise, it becomes futile. It becomes unsatisfactory for our heart. Just to make money, just to get some prestige, gives no real fulfillment. Some sense of fulfillment, but no real fulfillment. The heart is not seeking prestige or money. You can have a beautifully decorated body, living in a beautifully decorated house, but your heart will be empty, dry, as a desert. Unless we have an ideal that we're striving to live by and a goal to pursue in our life. And that ideal and goal is most naturally spiritual, because we are spiritual. This body and the world we live in is a temporary residence for the soul. But the soul is spiritual. It is part of God. It is eternal, full of knowledge, full of joy. And the soul is seeking to find its natural environment. It is seeking pleasure, fulfillment. And that fulfillment can only come through providing it its own spiritual necessities. So what is so lacking in the modern educational system is that there is so much technical knowledge, so highly developed, but no means by which human beings can find fulfillment in life, because they lack the spiritual aspect. Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj, explained that modern education are like many zeros. However many zeros you put together, they all add up to nothing. But spiritual knowledge is like one. If you put that one in front, keep it always as our focus and our goal, and however many zeros follow the one, increases the value of our life. So as students in college, you have a great future ahead as far as influencing others and making an impact in the world. But what type of impact and what type of achievements you make in life internally is based on the ideal that you put forth to pursue. It is said that you can judge a man by his ideal. Even if a man is without anything, if he has high ideal, he's a great soul. And even if we have not achieved our ideal, if we're striving for that ideal, that makes us great. Whatever our ideal is, that is what we will be judged by. Our ideal is money, then that's our life, that's our consciousness. If our ideal is to hurt others by any means, to get ahead in this world, then that is how we are to be judged. So the highest life is those persons who have the highest ideal. And the highest ideal is to seek that state by which we transcend all ignorance, all illusion, and come again in the light of true knowledge of God and realization of God. That is the real ideal and the real goal that life makes our life fulfilling and great. And even when we are at our beginning stages, there is great fulfillment, there is great purpose in our life, if we know we are striving for something great, for something beyond greed, and pride.
So this Krishna conscious education is very essential to be carefully understood, to be understood, analyzed, and applied to our life. Then it gives a purpose, a fulfillment, and a goal by which we can strive to achieve through our occupation and through everything that we are executing throughout our life. You are all striving to be doctors, but the question is, doctor for what purpose? What is your purpose of being a doctor? What is your purpose for being a businessman? What is your purpose for being a husband or a father? What is your purpose for being a politician? If it's just to make money, if it's just to survive, then you have no greater ideal than the animals, because they're also working hard to survive and to provide material necessities for themselves and their loved ones. Human life is something more than just animal consciousness. Human beings become progressive over the animals only when the addition of genuine spiritual values are included within their life as their goal, as their ideal. So in Krishna consciousness, it is explained that if you are to be a doctor, you be a doctor to perform your occupation for the purpose of purifying your heart and bringing your consciousness back to its original natural state of being the servant of Krishna, the servant of the Supreme Lord. And in that service, to realize our eternal blissful nature and to help others through our example and influence to also realize their eternal blissful nature. That service to God and that service to human society, to all living beings, is the greatest ideal. Why should we cheat ourselves to live for any other ideal but that which is the greatest, the highest, the most fulfilling? So please, deeply try to study and understand what Krishna is speaking in Gita. Associate with devotees, hear what they say. Probe with a real intention to understand philosophically, logically, practically. It's like you are so deeply going into your medical studies with even more enthusiasm. Go into this study of the purpose of life and then apply your other education to that purpose, and you will find something sublime. You'll find a glorious reason to live. You'll find the most pure and glorious reason to be a doctor or to be anything in this world. Do you have any questions? Becoming somewhat more knowledgeable and acquainted with this material body than the common man. Still, even the greatest medical scientists, there are so many mysteries about the human body that they have not discovered. But as you understand more and more about this human tabernacle that we are dwelling in, the deeper understanding, the more we understand how many possible ways there are to suffer and to die. Yes? A common man knows a few diseases. Leprosy, typhoid, maybe cholera, common cold, flu, cough. But as you study medicine, you realize there's so many various ways of suffering disease. There's so many various ways of suffering due to not only diseases coming from internal, but inflictions coming from external. Broken bones, broken skulls, concussions, comas. So many terrible diseases, cancer, AIDS, cholera, typhoid, pneumonia. I'm a layman, I know a few. But the more you study the body, the more you understand what a miserable situation it could be. Do you all agree with this principle? Medicine means you study disease. And there's so many doctors, and so many people want to be doctors because everyone gets diseased. There's no exception. From our childhood to our death, there's so many series of sufferings and miseries that come to us. So it is explained in Gita that this physical nature is a place of death. It's a place of suffering. And you are very well acquainted with this. And the longer and deeper you study, the more you'll understand that this material body and this world is a place of misery. And to try to ward off the misery for some temporary period of time is considered a great thing. But that's the most a doctor could do, is give some temporary relief. Even if you cure a person of a terrible disease, in a few years, that person's going to die anyway. If they're not going to die of this disease, they're going to die of something else. How long can you prolong a person's life? Reality means eternality. The soul is eternal. If you prolong the life for 5 or 10 or 20 years, what is that? When the 20 years is expired, will the person be willing to die any more than 20 years before? People, when they're cured of a great ailment, they say, I have a new lease in life. But when the lease expires and the eviction notice comes, it's not that they're any more anxious to leave now than they were the first time the lease was expiring. Maybe they got some extension. Padam padam yadvi padam natesham. This world, there are dangers at every step. And those who are interns, if you work in emergency wards, you know that there's danger at every step. People that come to the intensive care units of the emergency wards, most of them, they did not expect to be there that night. They were just living happily, eat, drink, sleep, be merry, and all of a sudden, something happens, and they're in this condition where you have to save their lives, where you have to make so many arrangements to alleviate their misery and suffering. So really, you should be introspective and reflect upon the reality of what you're observing and understand that there's something more than this. What is the difference between the living body and the dead body? When we see a body die, all the elements are there, before and after. But the person is gone. Who's that person? What is that person? What is life? Is life the heart? The heart's still there in the dead body. Is life in the brain? The brain is also still there in the dead body. Is life in the bloodstream? All the blood's still there in the dead body. Everything's there. What is left? That medical science, through all of its years, in the time of the great Greek medical practitioners to the present day. They have not clearly defined what is the difference between a living body and a dead body. They say there's no heartbeat, there's no pulse, there's no breath. But why? They say because of some malfunction. But if it's just a matter of malfunction, when a car breaks down because the engine's bad, you can put in a new engine and it'll start driving again. If the car doesn't run because the battery's dead, you put a new battery in and it runs again. No matter what happens to a car, you could put something in it and it'll make it run again. Correct? But why is, at the time of death, you can put everything new in. You could put a new brain, new first-cast kidneys, livers, eyes, everything. And it's a dead corpse. Because the person's gone. And Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic literatures teach us the science of that life source, the soul, the Atma. And when the Atma is in this physical body, it's in a condition of great dissatisfaction. Because the Atma is looking for unlimited pleasure. And this body is always causing it so much frustrations and pain. Why is it that no one wants to get diseased? Because it's the nature of the soul to be free from these things. It's unnatural. But if we realize that we are the soul, and we realize that this body has a very functional purpose to serve the purpose of the soul, then this body becomes wonderful because it fulfills the true aspiration of our real self. But if the soul is under ignorance and illusion and simply thinks that I am this body, then it is frustrated. There may be some enjoyment, but that enjoyment intoxicates our mind for some time, inevitably culminates in frustration. So we should be very thoughtful, because life is short. Right now you are all perhaps in your early 20s, late teens, early 20s. But you'll see, when you're 50, 60, 70, 80 years old, it will seem like only yesterday that you were in your college. Life goes so fast. And the older you get, the faster the years go by. There's not much time. So we should be very thoughtful. What are we going to strive for in our life? What are we going to leave for this world through our activities in life? What is the ideal and the goal which we are pursuing through our occupation in life? And Krishna consciousness will give you that real fulfilling purpose and realization of truth. Krishna consciousness is a great science. Raja vidya raja guyam pavitramitam uttama. Krishna says it is the greatest science, because it is a science of life itself. It is a science of consciousness. And this great land of India past, it was the highest culture in the whole planet. Not so far in the past either. Why do you think the Muslims from Afghanistan, Persia, why do you think they were so anxious to come with their greatest armies to conquer this place? Why the British, they controlled America, Canada, United States, they controlled most of Africa, Australia, so many of the countries in the East, Far East. It said that the sun never set in the British Empire, because practically the world was controlled by the British. But they said that India was the crown jewel of the British Empire. Because the culture was so rich, the resources were so rich, they have been exploited and misused terribly and left in a condition of Great Depression. Previously, and all history will confirm that India had the greatest culture, materially as well as spiritually, in this world. But now it is being sold out to chase after the shallow, superficial ways of Western culture. You are all wearing Western dress. You all have Western hairstyles. Most of your education is according to the Western format. I'm not saying these things are bad, provided we do not lose connection to our own great culture and heritage, at least in our ideal, at least in our purpose. Because in places like United States, Europe, there's so many big doctors. The people are suffering as much as anywhere else. Just different types. Here they're suffering from cataracts and tuberculosis and things that are easy to treat in the West. And people in the West say they are so uncivilized because people have these diseases which we can treat so easily here. But then they have their diseases that cannot be treated at all. Cancer, heart disease, AIDS. And as we become more westernized, we import all of these nice, incurable diseases. So what is the progress? No doubt, technology is good. But it is as good as the purpose in which we utilize it. And therefore I stress again, we must have the proper ideal. Our ideal must be based on truth, not illusion. Build our life on the foundation of truth. Direct all of our activities in the direction of truth. And there is a real greatness in our life. Do not allow the propaganda of materialistic thought to dissuade you from the goal of life. Because according to the materialistic conception, there is no goal of life. The goal of life is to try to live happily. But who does it? I haven't met anyone yet. I've traveled to so many continents of this world. There's some little happiness. That's so much frustration. Even the happiest person, there's no guarantee what will happen to him tomorrow. Beyond his control, he could be miserable. So there's no goal. There's no purpose, real purpose, unless there's spiritual consciousness. Our goal is to become transcendental to the dualities of this existence, to deal with them according to our capacity to be above them in consciousness. To be liberated from the limitations of the miseries of existence, and to find ultimate refuge in unalloyed, pure, loving service to the Supreme, to Krishna. The aspiration and hankering of every heart. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Any comments? Yes?
Even though we know that sense enjoyment is hazardous, but still it is very difficult to overcome sense enjoyment. It's very difficult to abandon, even after knowing it. So how do we go about it?
Like any addiction, we condition ourselves to something for so long, and when we realize that it's not good, it's very difficult to break that conditioning. If you have ever worked with an alcoholic, someone who has been drinking for 30, 40, 50 years, he becomes so habituated to drinking that if he doesn't have his drink, his mind becomes completely unstable. He becomes crazy. He can't live without it. His body, his mind, his nervous system, everything is simply longing for that alcohol to flow through it. But he knows that it's wrong. And his doctor tells him, you have sclerosis of the liver, and if you keep drinking, it's going to kill you. Give it up. But knowing that does not make it any easier. But knowing it gives him the understanding and perhaps the determination to give it up, even though it's practically impossible. And with good association, avoiding association of people who are drinking, associating with people who are very clean in their habits, it can be done. And it has been done. Similarly, people, when I was young, in the 1950s, nobody had the slightest clue that cigarettes were dangerous to the health. Did you know that? Nobody knew. The only people that knew were the tobacco companies. You heard about the great scandal that took place recently in the courts of America? This was just last summer. It was the biggest news in the United States. That it didn't come out till practically the late 60s and the 70s that cigarette smoking was dangerous to your health. Everyone thought it was just totally harmless and enjoyable, like breathing air, or like playing cricket. There's no harm. It's just fun to smoke cigarettes. Yes, you get addicted to it, but so what? Might cost some money, but we can afford it. But then all of a sudden, tens and thousands of people started dying of cancer. Cancer of the lungs, cancer of the throat, cancer of the mouth. And they realized that it was because of smoking cigarettes. And it was a shock. It was a thunderbolt of a shock to the whole nation. Because a major percentage of the adults were addicted to smoking, thinking it was harmless for years. And all of a sudden, they're given the information that it's deadly. It's killing people by the millions. This year, certain investigative committees discovered that the biggest tobacco companies, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, back in the 1950s, they had received reports from medical scientific laboratories that cigarettes will definitely cause lung cancer, birth defects, and all of these other things. But they didn't tell anyone because they were making so much money. And actually, this committee wanted to take these tobacco companies and all of the board members and all of the big executives to criminal charges in the courts. It was a big thing. But there's only one problem, that the cigarette industry makes so many billions and billions of dollars every year, and they have so much control over every politician in America, they could make them or break them just by giving their word, that the politicians all backed down because they were afraid. The committee's still trying, but they're not getting very far. So anyways, if somebody's addicted to smoking cigarettes for so many years, and then all of a sudden they think it's harmless and they learn that it's going to cause so many defects, so many cancerous conditions, it will cause. When I was young, the greatest movie stars, they would all smoke cigarettes in special ways. They were famous for the way they held their cigarettes. Every one of them died of cancer. Every one of them. One of them used to hold a cigarette hanging from his lips. He died of lip cancer. Terrible. So, these were the heroes of the nation. But they didn't know. So when you find out that cigarette is killing me, but you're addicted to it, it's very, very difficult to give it up. Your whole system is just habituated to have that nicotine. It needs it. It can't live without it. That's what your mind's telling you. If you don't have it, you start sweating, you start perspiring, you start going like this with everything you can get your hands on, and you just can't think straight what to do. But you know it's wrong. You have to simply stop. And you need the help of others to help you stop. You need support. In the same way, we're addicted to sense enjoyment since time immemorial. And we always thought it was all right. But now we're told that it's not. It's killing our spiritual propensities. But we're habituated. Not only for 10 or 15 years, but for millions of births. It's very difficult to give up. But Krishna consciousness, through the teachings of Gita, it teaches us a practical way by which it can be done, even though it is difficult. And that is by engaging our mind and senses in higher, more pleasurable spiritual activities. Sense gratification is not bad. Material sense gratification, based on ignorance and illusion, is bad. But spiritual sense gratification is actually the healthiest condition for the soul. Therefore, we don't want to simply give up eating. We eat prasad. By eating prasad, it tastes very nice, but instead of entangling us in karma, it purifies us of karma. We like to see something beautiful. Instead of looking at opposite sex bodies or going to these crazy cinemas or televisions and seeing all kinds of things that just intoxicate our minds, we see the beautiful form of the Lord in the temple. We see the beautiful vision of natural scenes in relationship to Krishna. It gives us real pleasure. The ears want to hear something nice. instead of hearing music, which is just glorifying immorality, we listen to those beautiful songs that awaken our love of God. Bhajan, kirtan. People like to dance. Instead of going to the disco or the ballroom to dance to attract the opposite sex, we dance to attract the love of Krishna. Devotees are blissful. Devotee senses are fully active, but in seva rather than for exploitation. So yes, we must somehow or other curb our senses from engaging in those activities which will create bondage and entanglement. But how do we do that? By keeping them engaged in positive, purifying spiritual activities. If you are a doctor, if you are a computer technician or whatever, if you're performing your work simply out of greed for money, that your work is simply entangling you. But if you are doing it with a consciousness of your identity, relationship with God, in the service of God, the same activity is free of karma. In fact, the same activity purifies and gives your heart and gives real pleasure to your soul. So in this way, and the path of bhakti, giving up sense gratification is wonderful, because we give up one sense gratification by experience a higher sense gratification, which is real, which is pure, which is based on selfless service and truth. And with proper direction and good association, it can be done. But no doubt there will be some difficulties. But if we have any dignity in our life, we'll be willing to undergo some difficulty for a higher purpose. Just to pass your exams, you have to go through difficulties. Why not go through difficulties, some difficulties, for the ultimate purpose of life? Any other questions?
I have spent 4.5 years in medicine, learning medicine.
Mm.
And now I'm aware of this spiritual knowledge in last few months. So now, what is the goal ultimately in this life, and can we achieve it with the help of medicine?
No, you cannot achieve it with the help of medicine.
Can we utilize this?
You can achieve it with the help of Krishna. But you can attract the help of Krishna by performing your occupation in a mood of devotion, in a mood of service, with proper consciousness. Arjuna was a warrior. And Arjuna was thinking, let me give up my occupation to pursue higher goals in life. And Krishna explained to him in the Gita that this is not the proper process. You can perform your occupation, but you do it with a consciousness of understanding what is the higher goals of life. So now you understand you are not this body, you are the eternal soul. And you understand to some extent the nature of the soul's relationship with the Supreme Soul, or Krishna. Can you understand that without that Krishna consciousness, what type of entanglement and sufferings are in this world? And you understand that with this consciousness, what a wonderful liberated condition of unalloyed love we can enter into. So now we must understand how to realize this. And for this we need proper association and proper guidance. Just like as a student, you have textbooks, but you also require teachers to guide you through these textbooks on a practical level. Similarly, in spiritual science, we need spiritual guides to help us. That is what guru is. It is very important that we live a very highly moral life. There are four regulative principles, which are the basic tenets of morality. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no eating of any animal products that cause death or suffering to others. It is explained that these basic principles do not further the fever of our entangled condition of life. Does not increase our karmic condition. Just like as a doctor, if someone has a disease, you give them a particular medicine, but simultaneously you tell them to avoid those activities which perpetuate the disease. So by living a moral life and by taking the medicines are, we must nourish our intelligence with spiritual virtues. That means by reading books like Srila Prabhupada's books, which explain so nicely the essence of the scriptures. By coming to such kathas or pravachans like today, hearing about the real goals of life, asking questions. This process of hearing from spiritual sources is an essential medicine because it gives us faith and conviction in truth. Also, we must chant the holy names each day very carefully and attentively, because the name of God in this age is the perfect medication for the condition that humanity is in. It cleanses the heart of illusion, of the impurities of unwanted, selfish desires. And it naturally and gradually brings the heart to its original natural condition, its healthy condition. When I'm speaking of the heart, I'm speaking of the soul within the heart. And also to associate with persons who are on this path, and to avoid intimately taking part in the activities of materialistic people. And if we do these things, then we have a strong spiritual foundation in our life. And then whatever our occupation is, we will do it in this mood of service, of seva. We will do it in the mood of pursuing the truth. And as a medical practitioner, if you have a strong spiritual base in your life, you can perform your medical practice in such a way that you're actually making spiritual progress by everything you do in your practice. Because you have the proper premise which motivates you to action. And you can help people tremendously, especially as a doctor. Any occupation, proper occupation, one can perfect one's life if one has a spiritual basis and a spiritual direction in which performing of the occupation is done. But as a medical doctor, you have a very special facility to help others, because people have faith in doctors. People come to doctors when they're in a suffering condition for relief. So by your professional training, you must do everything within your power to heal the relief of their body. If you're a devotee, through your good qualities, your compassion, your care, you try to cure the relief of their mind. And by giving them a spiritual
spiritual formula by which they can also cleanse their hearts and give up their materialistic, mundane ways, you could also cure their ultimate disease, the disease of avidya, into the transcendental realm of consciousness. And that's what these medicos, that is their goal. Dwarkadish Prabhu, he's not an ordinary doctor. He's efficient as a doctor, as all of you I'm sure would like to be. But there's something more, because he's not satisfied just healing a person's physical disease, because he knows it's just postponing that person's misery for another day at the best. He's really concerned with each patient. He's really concerned with everybody to give them real relief. Not only real relief, but real joy in Krishna, in purified consciousness, giving people the opportunity to live within the realm of truth. So in this way, yes, through your medical profession, you can do great service to humanity on a spiritual level, and it will also very much be an asset to your own spiritual life if you have the proper premise and the proper basis and the proper motivation.
After death, either the soul is liberated or is reborn as a man, or he becomes an animal in the next world. So what happens to the animals after the death?
In the human species is the junction by which we can elevate ourselves or degrade ourselves. It's like if you're going on a long, long highway and you're just going one direction and there's no crossroads, this long, long highway, then you finally come to the junction where you can go this way, that way, or backward. Huh? The animal species are only going one way. They're just birth after birth, they're proceeding in a systematic order according to the laws of nature to the human species. When an animal dies, the soul of that animal goes to the next progressive species, going through all the aquatics. After the aquatics, at first there's the flat life, vegetation life, trees, aquatics. There are so many species of aquatics, the soul goes through each one. One is higher than a higher consciousness than another. Then there's the insects and the reptiles, and then there's the birds, and then there's the beasts. So the soul transmigrates through all this systematically, then it comes to human life. Human life has choice. Animal life has no choice. Animal lives by its instinct and has no choice to decide anything outside of its own instinctive condition. When we come to the human form of life, we can be a saint or we can be a criminal. Or anything in between. And according to the desires and activities in which we cultivate in this life, that will determine where the soul goes after. It can be elevated to a higher human life if we're pious. It could be degraded to a suffering condition of human life if we're impious, or it could be degraded back into the animal species of life if we completely waste our lives with sense gratificatory activities.
And once it goes into the animal life, according to the animal life it goes into, then it just goes to the natural progression upward again until it comes to human life, and then another chance to go up, down, sideways accordingly.
But in the story of Jad Bharat, we are told that after he became deer for one life, again he got back his human life.
But Jad Bharat was 99% perfect spiritually. He just made a mistake. And if we become so spiritually advanced, even though we make a mistake, it was a token lesson for him to learn. It wasn't because of the laws of karma that he became a deer. It was just the arrangement of Krishna. He was such a great devotee, but you ended your life in total attachment to a deer. So you become a deer. But I'll give you the same consciousness that you have now. He had human consciousness in the body of a deer. And he realized, and he had complete recognition of what happened in his previous life. What have I done? And there, even in his deer life, he just went to wherever Bhagavad Katha was taking place and he would just listen. He didn't engage in any deer activities. He was a sadhu deer, deer sadhu. So if you become so advanced spiritually, you should know that that spiritual progress is never lost, even if you do make mistakes.
God forgives all our mistakes.
Hmm?
God forgives all our mistakes.
Where did you read that? Does he forgive us? He forgives us if we beg forgiveness. If we don't beg forgiveness, then he just lets us go on our own way. But we have to beg forgiveness, not just with our mouth, but through our actions. If we actually repent that we have done wrong, then we will do right. If we do that, yes, he will forgive us for anything we've done. There's no sin too great for the Lord to forgive if we show him that we want to be forgiven. But that is our choice. Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarva papebhyo sarva papebhyo mokshaya sharanamasuja. If you surrender to me, I will relieve you of all sinful reactions. All sinful reactions. Do not fear. However sinful we may be. Valmiki Muni was a murderer, an highway robber. But he surrendered to Ram, and he became the greatest of saints. And we are all reading his Ramayana, even so many long generations after. So yes, he will forgive us if we surrender. But if we do not surrender, he will just let us go through the course of the karma we create for ourselves. He will not interfere. Vaishnavs can explain because Vaishnavs understand Krishna. They understand God. Others who speculate, they cannot understand God. In regard to the Kauravas, Krishna explains in Gita that as you approach me, I will reward you accordingly. If you cheat me, I will cheat you. But of cheaters, I am best. If you love me, I will love you. Krishna loves everyone, even the cheater. But his love is to cheat them. Because that's how they're approaching him. The Kauravas tried to cheat through so many immoral ways. You've heard the saying, live by the sword, die by the sword? Huh? The Kauravas were so envious and so immoral that they did not deserve to die completely morally. So Krishna arranged that there be some immorality in the way they die also, because that's the way they approached him. What is the difficulty? But that's a mundane consideration. Because for Krishna, there's no such thing as immorality. Because he is the author of the whole system of morality and immorality. He is above it. He is above material nature. Moral and immoral is only within material nature. He is above. Whatever he does is perfect, because whatever he does is for the ultimate good of everyone. And whatever he does is done with pure love. For the soul. So, Karna was such a terrible cheater. So much treacherous immoralities he performed to the Pandavas, Krishna's devotees. And also Duryodhana. He cheated them in the dice match. He tried to strip Draupadi naked. He tried to humiliate them in so many ways. He banished them to the forest. He took away their throne. He lied. He cheated. He did everything against the Pandavas. So Krishna told Bhima, you can hit him below the belt, no problem, with your club. And Krishna told Arjuna that you can shoot Karna now. He's done so much wicked things to you. You can shoot him when he's trying to take his wheel out of the mud. And by doing it, you will liberate them from the cycle of birth and death forever. So it was his mercy. If you can perform an immoral act to somebody, and through that process liberate them from the cycle of birth and death forever, then it's not bad. It's very good. But can you do that? Can any of us do that? But Krishna can do that. So is that immoral? That is not immoral at all. Materially it appears that way. But actually, it's the greatest morality, because he's showing the greatest mercy to them. And unless we understand Krishna's transcendental position, we cannot understand anything he does properly. And the Vaishnavas are those who understand his transcendental position. That answer your question.
Common mass might be deluded by these things. You do not have the opportunity to come across Vaishnavas.
The common mass is deluded by everything. It's not just these things, it's everything. But if they want to understand the truth, Krishna will give them the intelligence to understand properly. It's a question of desire. The common masses do not want to know the truth. The common masses actually desire to remain in delusion. And therefore Krishna allows. Even when they meet the Vaishnavas, they can't understand. They don't want to understand. But a person who's a little matured through the conditions of material existence wants to understand. And then Krishna will certainly direct you to that person or those persons who can give you the proper understanding. But you should know that this compassion you have for the common masses is very good. So try to do something for them. Because Krishna empowers the Vaishnavas to actually interfere with their delusion and give them the chance to understand something higher. You have that power if you take it. So if you really feel that the masses are suffering because they don't understand Krishna, they don't understand the goal of life, then we should be willing to dedicate our life, either through our profession or through whatever other means, to actually give people the chance to have this higher understanding. That's what this temple is here for. It's not here for us. We would certainly be very happy living in Vrindavan than this polluted, congested city of Bombay. This temple is here and all these devotees are living here for one purpose: to give a chance to the common people to find the real joy of life and understand the real purpose of life and come out of illusion. And that is the greatest ideal. And if you can assist, that will be your greatest fortune in life. Krishna says in the fourth chapter of Gita, Janamakarma chame divyam evam yo vetita tvata chakpadeham punara janmana itima veti sorvim. One who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never takes birth in this material world again, but attains my eternal spiritual abode. So to give people the proper understanding of Krishna, of God, of this world, is the greatest need for suffering humanity. And real knowledge and practical application of the knowledge is the most desperately required medicine in this world. There's an epidemic of ignorance. So we should volunteer. We should volunteer to distribute this medicine of transcendental knowledge and relieve people of this great plague of ignorance. Yes? Hare Krishna. You can sing?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? You can start and they'll bring. Throws up on you, vomits on you. What is your reaction?
I'm talking. I don't know about a common man who's not aware.
I'm telling you, if somebody comes to your hospital and vomits on you, what is your reaction?
If he's a patient, if he's not doing it out of his consciousness, he's had a disease. So my attitude towards him will be, of course, sympathetic, and I would like to take care of him. If somebody is in this material world, who wants
wickedness to is just like vomit. People have so many terrible desires in their hearts, so many sinful desires in their hearts, that their activities are just like vomit. It's just that their sinful consciousness is coming out through their actions. It's a disease. It's a disease of ignorance. So two things. One is you have to have compassion that this person is diseased, and if at all possible, try to give him the medication by which he can be cured of his disease. And that's Krishna consciousness, Sanatana Dharma, knowledge and application of the knowledge. But at the same time, it is your duty to protect yourself from contracting that. So
if someone treats you wicked, the best thing to do is to be tolerant, to be humble, and to try to help that person, or to just go away. If that person is actually infringing on your rights, you have a right to defend yourself. But you should not do it on the level he's doing it, in hatred and envy, because then you're no better than him. You may have to defend yourself, but you should do it out of necessity, with a feeling of sympathy for that person. Yes? Because usually when someone's wicked to you, in their own mind they're defending themselves. They're defending some egoistic condition in their consciousness. And this false ego is a great disease. We should also learn that I don't want to be like this. Let me chant Krishna's names and become cleansed of all these tendencies. So now Dwarkadish Prabhu will teach you how to be cleansed of all these tendencies.